Chapter 3. Charlie checked her watch. She was on time to meet John, even early. She passed under a streetlight and looked down at herself, checking her clothes. Oh no. The knees of her jeans were wet with mud, and there was a dark stain where she had wiped her fingers clean of the dead man's blood. I can't show up covered in blood. He's seen me like this too many times already. She sighed and turned around. Thankfully, Jessica was gone when she got back to the room. Charlie didn't want to talk about what had just happened. Clay hadn't explicitly told her to keep it a secret, but she was fairly sure she shouldn't broadcast her private visit to a crime scene. Charlie cast a glance at the faces under their pillowcase cover, but didn't go to them. She wanted to show her project to John, but, like Jessica, he might not understand. She opened a dresser drawer and stared down at the contents without registering them. In her mind, she saw the body again, its limbs splayed out as if it had been thrown down where it lay. She covered her face with her hands, taking deep breaths. She had seen the scars, but she'd never seen the wounds of the spring locks fresh. Now Dave's eyes came to her, the look of shock just before he fell. Charlie could feel the locks in her hands, feel them resist, then give way and snap. That's what happened. That's what I did. She swallowed and slid her hands down to her throat. Charlie shook her head like a dog shaking off a wet coat. She looked at the open drawer again, concentrating. I need to change. What is all this? The drawer was filled with brightly colored shirts, all unfamiliar. Charlie startled, a dim panic seizing her. What is all this? She picked up a t-shirt and dropped it again, then forced herself to take a deep breath. Jessica, they're Jessica's. She'd opened the wrong drawer. Get it together, Charlie, she told herself sternly, and somehow it sounded like Aunt Jen's voice in her head. Despite everything that lay between her and her aunt, just imagining her cold, authoritative voice made Charlie a little calmer. She nodded to herself, then grabbed what she needed, a clean t-shirt and jeans. She dressed hurriedly, then left to meet John, her stomach fluttering, half excited, half sick. A date, she thought. What if it doesn't go well? Worse, what if it does? As she neared the Thai restaurant, she saw that John was already there. He was waiting outside, but he didn't look impatient. He didn't spot her right away, and Charlie slowed her pace for a moment, watching him. He seemed at ease, gazing into the middle distance with a vague, pleasant expression. He had an air of confidence he hadn't possessed a year ago. It wasn't that he'd been unsure of himself then, but now he looked adult. Maybe it was because he'd gone straight to work after high school. Maybe it was what happened last year at Freddy's, Charlie thought with an unexpected sense of envy. Although she'd moved out on her own, to a new home and a new college, she felt as if the experience had left her more a child, not less. Not a cared for or protected child, but one who was vulnerable and unmoored. A child who had looked under the bed and seen the monsters. John noticed her and waved. Charlie waved back and smiled, the expression unforced. Date or not, it was good to see him. How was your last class? He said by way of greeting, and Charlie shrugged. I don't know. It was class. How was the rest of work? He grinned.
It was work. Are you hungry?
Yes, Charlie said decisively. They headed inside and were motioned to a table.
Have you been here before?
John asked, and Charlie shook her head. I don't get out much, she said. I don't even come out to town that often. The college is sort of its own little world, you know?
I can imagine, John said cheerfully.
Now that the secret was out that he wasn't in school, he'd apparently shed his earlier discomfort.
Isn't it a little bit, he searched for words. Doesn't it feel a little isolated?
Not really, Charlie said. If it's a prison, it's not one of the worst.
I didn't mean to compare it to a prison, John said. So, come on, what are you studying?
Charlie hesitated. There was no reason not to tell John, but it seemed too soon, too risky to announce that she was eagerly following in her father's footsteps. She didn't want to tell him she was studying robotics until she had some idea of how he would respond, just like with her project. Most colleges make you do a set of classes your first year, English, math, everything like that, she said, hoping it would sound like a response. Suddenly, Charlie didn't want to talk about school. She wasn't sure she could keep up a conversation about anything, really. She looked at John, and for a moment imagined the springlock wounds in his neck. Her eyes widened and she bit the inside of her cheek, trying to ground herself.
Tell me about your job, she said, and saw her own hesitation mirrored on his face.
I mean, I like the work, he said. More than I thought I would, actually. There's something about doing physical labor that kind of frees my mind. It's like meditation. It's hard, though, really hard. Construction workers always make it look so easy, but it turns out it takes a while to build up that kind of muscle.
He stretched his arms comically over his head, and Charlie laughed, but couldn't help noticing that he was clearly well on his way to that kind of muscle. John leaned to his left and gave his armpit a quick sniff, then made a look of mock embarrassment. Charlie looked down at her menu and giggled.
Do you already know what you want? She asked.
Then the waitress appeared out of nowhere, as if she'd been listening nearby. John ordered, and Charlie froze. She'd said it just to say something, but she didn't know what to get. Suddenly, she noticed all the prices. Everything on the menu was impossibly expensive. She hadn't even thought about money when she accepted John's invitation, but now her mind jumped to her wallet and her nearly empty bank account. Misreading her expression, John leaped in.
If you've never had Thai food, Pad Thai is good, he suggested. I should have asked, he said awkwardly. If I'm buying a lady dinner, I should make sure she likes the food.
He looked embarrassed, but Charlie was flooded with relief. Buying a lady dinner. No, I'm sure I'll like it, she said. Pad Thai, thanks, she told the waitress, then gave John a mock glare. Who are you calling a lady? She said playfully, and he laughed.
What's wrong with that?
It just sounds weird, you calling me a lady, Charlie said. So anyway, what do you do all day besides meditate?
Well, the days are long, and like I said, I'm still writing, so there's that. It's strange being in Hurricane again, though. I didn't mean to put down roots.
Put down roots?
Like, join a bowling team or something. Ties to the community, things like that.
Charlie nodded. She, of all people, understood the need to remain apart. Why did you take the job here, then? She asked. I know they needed people because of the storm, but you didn't have to come, right? People are still building things in other places.
That's true, he admitted. To be honest, it was more about getting away from where I was.
Sounds familiar, Charlie muttered, too softly for him to hear. The waitress returned with their food. Charlie took a quick bite of rice noodles and immediately burned her mouth. She grabbed her water glass and drank.
Yikes, that's hot, she said.
So what were you getting away from? She asked the question casually, as if the answer would be simple.
Do you have nightmares too?
She held back the words, waiting for him to speak. John hesitated.
A girl, actually, he said. He paused, searching for a reaction. Charlie stopped chewing. That wasn't at all the answer she'd been expecting. She swallowed, nodding with self-conscious enthusiasm. After an excruciating silence, John went on.
We started dating the summer after Freddy's. I told her I wasn't looking for anything serious. She said she wasn't either. Then suddenly it was 6 months later, and we were serious. I had just started working. I'd moved out on my own and had this grown-up relationship. It was a shock, but a good one, I guess.
He stopped, not sure whether he should continue. Charlie wasn't sure she wanted to give him permission. So, tell me about her, she said calmly, avoiding eye contact.
She was, is, I mean. I'm not dating her, but it's not like she's dead. Her name is Rebecca. She's pretty, I guess. Smart. She's a year older than me. A college student studying English. Has a dog. So yeah, she was all right.
What happened?
I don't know, he said.
Really? Charlie said dryly, and he smiled.
No, I felt on guard around her. Like there were things I couldn't tell her. Things she'd just never understand. It wasn't because of her. She was great. But she knew I was holding something back. She just didn't know what it was.
I wonder what it could have been, Charlie asked quietly. The question was rhetorical. They both knew the answer. John smiled.
Well, anyway, she broke up with me and I was devastated, blah, blah, blah. Actually, I don't think I was that devastated.
John looked down, focusing on his food but not touching it.
Have you ever tried to tell anyone about Freddy's?
John glanced back up and pointed his fork at Charlie. She shook her head.
It wasn't just what happened, he went on. I can't imagine telling that story and having her believe me, but it wasn't only that. I wanted her to know the facts of it, but more, I wanted to tell her what it did to me, how it changed me.
It changed all of us, Charlie said.
Yeah, and not just last year. From the beginning. I didn't realize it until after we'd all gone back, how much that place had just followed me.
He glanced at Charlie.
Sorry, it must be even weirder for you.
Charlie shrugged uncomfortably. Maybe. I think it's just different. Her hand was resting on the table beside her water glass, and now John reached out to touch it. She stiffened, and he drew back.
Sorry, he said. I'm sorry.
It's not you, Charlie said quickly. His dead face, the dead skin of his throat. She had barely noticed it at the time, overwhelmed by the whole experience, but now the feeling of the dead man's neck came back to her. It was as if she were touching him right now. She could feel his skin, slack and cold, and slick with blood. She could feel the blood on her fingers. She rubbed her hands together. They were clean. She knew they were clean. But still, she could feel the blood.
You're being dramatic.
I'll be right back, she said, and got up before John could respond. She made her way around the tables to the bathrooms at the back of the restaurant. It was a 3-stall bathroom. Thankfully, it was empty. Charlie went straight to the sink and turned the hot water on full blast. She pumped soap onto her hands and scrubbed them for a long time. She closed her eyes and focused on the feeling of hot water and soap, and slowly the memory of blood faded. As she dried her hands, she looked at herself in the mirror. Her reflection looked wrong somehow, off, as if it wasn't herself she saw, but a copy. Someone else dressed as her.
Get it together, Charlie, she thought.
trying to hear the words in Aunt Jen's voice, as she had before. She closed her eyes. Get it together. When she opened them again, she was back in the mirror. Her reflection was her own. Charlie smoothed her hair and went back out to the table, where John was waiting for her with a concerned expression.
Is everything okay?
He asked nervously.
Did I do something?
Charlie shook her head. No, of course not. It's been a long day, that's all. There's an understatement. She glanced at her watch. Do we still have time for a movie? She asked. It's almost 8:30.
Yeah, we should go, John said. Are you done?
Yeah, it was really good, thank you. She smiled at him. The lady liked it. John smiled back, visibly relaxing. He went to the counter to pay, and Charlie went outside, waiting for him on the sidewalk. Dark had fallen, and there was a chill in the air. Charlie wished briefly that she'd thought to bring a sweatshirt. John joined her after a moment.
Ready?
Yeah, Charlie said. Where is it? He looked at her for a moment and shook his head.
The movie was your idea, remember?
He laughed. Like I said, I don't get out much. Charlie looked down at her feet.
The theater's only a few blocks away.
They walked in silence for a while. I found out what happened to Freddy's, she said without thinking, and John looked at her, surprised.
Really? What happened?
They were tearing it down. Then the storm came and everyone got called away. Now it's just standing there, half collapsed. All the stuff is gone, though, she added, seeing the question in John's eyes. I don't know what they did with them. It was a lie. Charlie couldn't tell him what had really happened without telling him how she knew. All those questions led back to the same place, the dead man in the field.
Who were you? What about your father's house? John asked. Did you ask your Aunt Jen about it? What's she going to do with it?
I don't know, Charlie said. I haven't talked to her since August. She fell silent, not looking at John as they walked. They reached their destination, a shabby one-screen movie theater named the Grand Palace. Its name was either ironic or wishful thinking. Emblazoned on the marquee was their current showing, Zombies versus Zombies.
I think it's about zombies, John joked as they went inside.
The movie had already started. Someone on screen was screaming, as what were apparently zombies came at her from all sides. She was surrounded. The creatures crouched like wild dogs, ready to spring and devour her. They moved to attack, and a man grabbed her arm, pulling her to safety.
Charlie, John touched her arm, whispering. Over there.
He gestured to the back row. The place was half full, but the back row was empty, and they made their way furtively to the middle. They sat, and Charlie turned her attention to the screen.
Thank goodness, she thought. Maybe we can finally relax.
She settled back in her seat, letting the images on the screen blur past her. Shrieks, gunfire, and thrumming music filled the silence between them. From the corner of her eye, she saw John glance at her nervously. Charlie focused her attention on the movie. The main characters, a man and woman with the generic, angular good looks of the big screen, were shooting automatic weapons into a crowd of zombies. As the first ranks were killed, not killed, stopped, though severed in half by the guns, they still twitched on the ground. The ones behind climbed over their fallen cohorts. The camera switched back to the man and woman, who jumped a fence and took off running. Behind them, the zombies kept coming, struggling forward, oblivious to the undead bodies they waded through. The music was urgent, the bass line pounding like an artificial heartbeat, and Charlie relaxed against the seat, letting herself be absorbed into it all.
What was he doing there?
The image of the dead man returned to her.
Something about the wounds bothered her, but she hadn't been able to put her finger on it. I recognized those wounds. They all matched what I remembered, but something was different. What was it?
She sensed movement next to her and saw John trying to stretch an arm toward her.
Really? She thought.
Do you have enough room? She asked him, and scooted away without waiting for a response. He looked embarrassed, but she glanced away, planting her elbow on the other armrest and staring fixedly at the screen.
Enough room. That's it.
She closed her eyes, concentrating on the image in her head. The wounds were slightly larger and more spaced out. The suit he was wearing was bigger than the suits from Freddy's. The man was probably 5'10" or 5'11", which means the suits must have been at least 7 feet tall. On screen, there was quiet again, but it was short-lived. Charlie watched, mesmerized, as the dirt spilled away of its own volition, moving like magic as the zombie rose.
It wouldn't be like that, Charlie thought definitively. It's not that easy to get out of a grave.
By now, the zombie on screen was halfway out, crawling to the surface and looking around with its glassy, mindless eyes.
You can't get out that fast.
Charlie blinked and shook her head, trying to stay focused.
Zombies. Lifeless things. The closet was full of costumes, lifeless yet ever watching, with plastic eyes and dead, hanging limbs. Somehow their corpse-like stares had never bothered her, or Sammy. They liked to touch the fur, sometimes put it in their mouths and giggle at the funny way it felt. Some was old and matted, some new and soft. The closet was their place, just for the two of them. Sometimes they babbled together in words that had meaning only to them. Sometimes they played side by side, lost in separate worlds of make-believe. But they were always together. Sammy was playing with a truck when the shadow came. He ran it back and forth on the floor, not noticing that their ribbon of light had been cut off. Charlie turned and saw the shadow, so still he could be an illusion, just another costume out of place. Then the sudden movement, the chaos of fabric and eyes. The truck clanked as it fell to the floor, and then loneliness. A dark so complete that she began to believe she'd never seen at all. The memories of sight had only been a dream, a trick of the utter blackness. She tried to call his name. She could feel him nearby, but all around her were solid walls.
Can you hear me? Sammy? Let me out! Sammy?
But he was gone, and he was never there again.
Charlie, are you okay?
What? Charlie looked at John. She realized she'd pulled her feet up on the chair and was hugging her knees to her chest. She sat back, setting her shoes back on the floor. John gave her a concerned look.
I'm fine, she whispered, and gestured to the screen.
John put a hand on her forearm.
Are you sure you're okay?
He asked. Charlie stared straight ahead. Now there were people running, the zombies lurching after them.
This doesn't make sense, Charlie muttered, mostly to herself.
What?
John leaned toward her. Charlie didn't move, but she repeated herself.
It doesn't make sense. Zombies don't make sense. If they're dead, the central nervous system is shot, and they can't do any of this. If there's a functioning central nervous system, which has somehow decayed to the point that movement and thought are possible, but severely hindered, fine. If it makes them violent, fine. But why would they want to eat brains? It doesn't make sense.
That man wouldn't have been able to walk on his own in a suit so oversized. He didn't walk into that field. The suit did. The animatronic was carrying him inside. It walked into that field of its own accord.
Maybe it's symbolic, John suggested, eager to engage, however odd the conversation. You know, like the idea that you eat your enemy's heart to gain their power, maybe the zombie eats its enemy's brain to gain its central nervous system?
He glanced at Charlie, but she was only half listening.
Okay, she said.
She'd been irritated by the movie. Now she was irritated by the conversation she herself had introduced.
I'll be right back, she told John, and got up without waiting for him to respond.
She made her way out of the row, through the lobby, and out the door. On the sidewalk, she took a deep breath and felt an intense relief at the wash of fresh air.
Dreams about being trapped are common, she reminded herself.
She'd looked it up when they began. They were only slightly less common than dreams of showing up to class naked, plummeting from a great height, or having your teeth all suddenly fall out.
But this didn't feel like a dream.
Charlie jostled her thoughts back to the present, where even the crime scene of a gruesome murder seemed like a safer place to keep them.
There must be tracks. He didn't walk there himself. There must be some clue of what carried him into that field and where it came from.
Charlie shivered. She went back inside the building.
John's going to think I'm nuts.
She arrived at the swinging theater doors and stopped. She couldn't do it. She had to know. There was a young man at the concession stand, and she asked him if the place had a payphone. He pointed silently to his right, and Charlie went, fishing in her pocket for a quarter, and for Chief Burke's card. She dialed carefully, pausing between numbers to check the card again, as if the writing might have changed since she looked. Clay Burke answered on the third ring.
Burke.
Clay, it's Charlie.
Charlie? What's wrong?
He was instantly alert. Charlie could picture him leaping to his feet, ready to run.
Nothing, I'm fine, she assured him. Everything is okay. I just wanted to see if you found anything else.
Not so far, he told her.
Oh.
Burke let the silence stretch between them, and Charlie finally broke it.
Is there anything else you can tell me? I know it's confidential, but you've brought me in this far. Please, if there's anything else you know, anything else you found, anything you know about the man, the victim.
No, Clay said slowly. I mean, I'll let you know when we find something.
Okay, Charlie said. Thanks.
I'll be in touch.
Okay.
Charlie hung up the phone before he could say goodbye.
I don't believe you, she said to the phone on the wall.
Back in the theater, her eyes took a moment to adjust as she inched along the back row toward her seat, careful not to make noise. John looked up at her with a smile as she sat down, but didn't say anything. Charlie smiled back with a grim determination and settled back in her seat, then scooted over until her shoulder was pressed against his. From behind her head, she heard him make a surprised noise. Then he shifted, putting his arm around her shoulders. He gripped her tightly for a moment, halfway to a hug, and Charlie leaned in a little, unsure how else to reciprocate.
What if someone put him in the costume, like some kind of wind-up death trap? Stuck him inside that thing, then sent it walking until the spring locks went off. But who would know how to do that? Why would someone do that?
Did I miss anything? Charlie asked, though she hadn't paid any attention to the first half of the movie anyway. It was daytime on screen, and it looked like there were more people, holed up in some sort of bunker. Charlie couldn't remember which of them had been the original characters. She wriggled in her seat. John's arm around her had relaxed, but now the arm of the seat was digging into her side. He started to move away, but she settled herself again.
No, it's okay,
she whispered, and his arm circled her again.
Just get on with it, Charlie said, flustered.
John startled.
Sorry, I didn't want to be too aggressive.
No, not you,
Charlie gestured toward the screen.
They should just build a minefield around the bunker and wait for them to all blow up. The end.
I think that's actually what they do in the sequel, but we'll have to wait to watch it for ourselves.
He winked.
There's another one?
She sighed. When the credits started to roll, they gathered their things and headed to the exits with the rest of the small crowd, not speaking until they got outside. On the sidewalk, they stopped.
This has been nice, John said,
sounding, somehow, like he meant it. And Charlie laughed, then groaned, covering her face with both hands.
This has been awful. This has been the worst date ever. I'm so sorry. Thanks for lying, though.
John gave an uncertain smile.
It was nice to see you,
he said with cautious levity.
It's just, can we go somewhere to talk?
John nodded, and Charlie started back toward campus with him following behind. The quad was usually empty late at night, or at least mostly empty. There was always someone walking across, some student finishing up late-night work in a lab, some couple ensconced in a dark corner. Tonight was no different, and it was easy enough to find their own dark corner to talk. Charlie sat down under a tree, and John copied her, then waited for her to talk as she stared at the gap between two buildings, where you could almost see the woods. Finally, he prompted her.
So, what's up?
Right, she met his eyes. Clay came to see me today.
John's eyes widened, but he didn't say anything.
He took me to see a body, Charlie went on. He had died inside one of the mascot costumes.
John was frowning. She could almost see his thoughts, working through what this meant and why it involved Charlie.
That's not all. Clay told me that they found blood in the main dining room at Freddy's. Fake blood.
John's head jerked up.
You think Dave's alive?
Charlie shrugged. Clay didn't come out and say it, but all those scars. He had survived the spring locks of a mascot costume before. He must have known how to escape the building.
It didn't look to me like he escaped,
John said doubtfully. He could have faked it. It would certainly explain the blood.
So what then? Dave is alive and stuffing people into spring lock suits and killing them?
If I could just go back to the restaurant one more time to make sure that...
Charlie stopped, suddenly aware of growing anger in John's face.
To make sure that what?
He asked sternly.
Nothing. Clay has it under control. Everything is best left with the police.
She clenched her jaw, gazing out over the horizon.
Jessica will go with me.
Right,
John said with a surprised look.
Right. You're right.
Charlie nodded with forced enthusiasm.
Clay has men for this sort of thing,
she continued with a furrowed brow.
I'm sure they're on top of it.
John took Charlie's shoulders lightly.
I'm sure it's not what you think it is anyway,
he said in a hearty, reassuring tone.
There's a lot of crime in this world that doesn't involve self-imploding furry robot suits.
He laughed and Charlie forced a smile.
Come on.
John extended a hand and Charlie took it.
I'll walk you to your dorm.
I appreciate the gesture, she said. But Jessica's there, and we'd have to go through the whole reunion, you know?
John laughed.
Okay, I'll save you from Jessica and her relentless camaraderie.
Charlie grinned.
My hero. Where are you staying anyway?
That little motel you stayed at last year, actually, John said. I'll see you tomorrow, maybe?
Charlie nodded and watched him go, then started on her own way home. Excruciating though the date had been, the last half hour felt like a homecoming. It was her and John again. They were familiar again. All we needed was a good old-fashioned murder, she said aloud, and a woman walking her dog gave Charlie an odd look as she passed in the opposite direction.
I was at a movie, Zombies vs. Zombies, Charlie called half-heartedly after her retreating back. You should go check it out. They don't put mines around the bunker. Spoiler alert.
Charlie had half-hoped Jessica would be asleep, but the lights were on when she reached their room. She flung open the door before Charlie had her key out of her pocket, her face flushed.
So?
Jessica demanded.
So what?
Charlie asked, grinning in spite of herself.
Hey, before you start into this, I need to ask you something.
So you know what? Jessica cried, ignoring her question.
Tell me about John. How did it go?
Charlie felt the corner of her mouth twitch. Oh, you know, she said casually. Listen, I need you to go somewhere with me in the morning.
Charlie, you have to tell me.
Jessica moaned exaggeratedly and flopped back on her bed. Then she sprang back up into a sitting position.
Come here and tell me.
Charlie sat, drawing her legs up under her.
It was weird, she admitted. I didn't know what to say. Dates just seem so uncomfortable. But about what I was saying.
But it's John. Shouldn't that outweigh the date part?
Well, it didn't, Charlie said. She looked at the floor. She could tell her face was red, and suddenly she wished she hadn't told Jessica anything at all. Jessica put her hands on Charlie's shoulders and looked at her seriously.
You are amazing, and if John isn't just falling all over himself for you, that's his problem.
Charlie giggled.
I think he kind of is. It's part of the problem. But there is something else if you would just listen for a second.
Oh, there's more? Jessica laughed. Charlie, you need to save something for the second date, you know.
What? No, no, no. I need you to go somewhere with me in the morning.
Charlie, I have a lot going on right now. I have exams coming up and I need you.
Charlie clenched her jaw for a moment.
I need you to help me pick out new clothes for my next date, she said carefully, then waited to see if Jessica would believe a word of it.
Charlie, are you kidding me? We'll go first thing in the morning.
She jumped up and gave Charlie a giant hug.
We'll have a girl's day out. It will be amazing.
Jessica flopped back to her bed.
Sleep for now, though.
It won't bother you if I work on my project for a while, will it?
Not at all.
Jessica waved limply, then went still. Charlie turned on her work lamp, a single bright beam that was focused enough to not illuminate the whole room. She uncovered the faces. They were at rest, their features smooth as if in sleep, but she didn't turn them on yet. The switches that made them move and talk were only one part of the whole. There was another component. The part that made them listen was always on. Everything that she and Jessica said, every word spoken in the room, outside the window, or even in the hall, they heard. Each new word went into their databases, not only as a single word, but in all its configurations as they emerged. Each new piece of information was stuck to the piece of information most like it. Everything new was built on something old. They were always learning. Charlie turned on the component that allowed them to speak. Their features rippled softly, as if they were stretching themselves.
I know, said the first, more quickly than usual. So what? Said the second. Know what?
You know, so what? Know what? Now what? What now? Know how? Why now?
Charlie switched them off, staring as the fan slowed to a stop. That didn't make sense. She looked at her watch. It was about 3 hours too late for bed. She changed quickly and climbed under the sheets, leaving the faces uncovered. There was something unnerving about their exchange. It was faster than it had ever been, and it was nonsensical. But there was something about it that rang familiar. It struck her. "Were you playing a game?" she asked. They couldn't answer, and just stared blankly into each other's eyes. Chapter 4. She removed the pillowcase gently, taking care not to let it catch on anything. Beneath their shroud, the faces, blank and sightless, were placid. They looked like they could wait, ever listening, for eternity. Charlie switched them on and bent over to watch as they began to move their plastic mouths without sound, practicing. "Where?" said the first. "Here," said the second. "Where?" said the first again. Charlie drew back. Something was wrong with the voice. It sounded strained. "Here," repeated the second. "Where?" said the first with a rising intonation, like it was growing upset. That's not supposed to happen, Charlie thought, alarmed. They shouldn't be able to modulate their voices. "Where?" the first wailed, and Charlie stepped back. She leaned down slowly to peer under the desk, as though she might find an entanglement of wires that would explain the strange behavior. As she stared, puzzled, a baby began to cry. She stood at once, knocking her head painfully on the edge of the desk. The two faces looked suddenly more human and more childlike. One was crying, the other watching with an astonished look on its face. "It's okay," said the calmer face. "Don't leave me," the other wailed as it turned to look at Charlie.
"I'm not going to leave you," Charlie cried. "Everything will be okay."
The sound of crying swelled, higher and louder than human voices should be, and Charlie covered her ears, looking desperately around for someone to help. Her bedroom had darkened, and heavy things hung from the ceiling. Matted fur brushed her face, and her heart jolted. The children are not safe. She turned back, but an acre of fabric and fur had somehow fallen between her and the wailing babies.
"I'll find you!"
She shoved her way through, tripping on limbs that dragged on the ground. The costumes swung wildly, like trees in a storm, and a little distance away, something fell to the floor with a hard clunk. At last, she reached her desk, but they were gone. The howling went on and on, so loud Charlie couldn't hear herself think, even as she realized that the screaming was her own. Charlie sat up with a loud, raw gasp, as if she had actually been screaming.
"Charlie?"
It was John's voice. Charlie looked around with one bleary eye to see a head peering through the bedroom door.
"Give me a minute,"
Charlie called as she sat up straight.
"Get out,"
she cried, and John's head shrank back. The door closed. She felt shaky, her muscles weak. She'd been holding them tense in her sleep. She changed quickly into clean clothes and tried to brush her slightly tangled hair into something more manageable, then opened the door. John poked his head in again, taking a cautious look around.
"Okay, come in. It's not booby-trapped, though maybe it should be," Charlie joked.
"How did you get in here?"
"Well, it was open, and I..."
John trailed off as he took in the room around him, momentarily distracted by the mess.
"I thought maybe we could go to breakfast. I have to work across town in about 40 minutes, but I have some time."
"Oh, what a nice thought,
but I, she said. Sorry for the mess. It's my project. I sort of get wrapped up in it and forget to clean. She glanced at her desk. The pillowcase was in place as it should be, the vague outlines of the faces just visible beneath it. It was just a dream. John shrugged.
Yeah? What's the project?
Language? Sort of. She looked around the room curiously. Where had Jessica wandered off to? Charlie knew John would be suspicious of her sudden, unprecedented interest in clothes shopping, and was hoping to avoid explanations. Natural language programming, she went on. I'm taking computer programming classes. At the last moment, something stopped her from saying the word robotics. John nodded. He was still eyeing the mess, and Charlie couldn't tell what had caught his attention. She plunged back into her explanation. So, I'm working on teaching language, spoken language, to computers. She walked briskly to the door and peered out into the hall.
Don't computers already know language? John called.
Well, yeah, Charlie said as she returned to the room. She looked at John. His face had changed, stripped down to something more adult. But she could still see him as he'd been the year before, captivated as he watched her old mechanical toys. I can tell him. But then a look of alarm crossed John's face. He surged forward to her bed, stopping a few inches from it. He pointed.
Is that Theodore's head?
He asked carefully. Yeah, Charlie said. She walked to the windows and peeped through the blinds, trying to spot Jessica's car.
So you have been to the house?
No. Well, yeah, I went back once, she confessed. To get him. She looked back at John guiltily. He shook his head.
Charlie, you don't have to explain yourself, he said. It's your house.
He grabbed the chair from her desk and sat down.
Why did you take him apart?
She studied his face worriedly, wondering if he was already asking himself the next obvious question.
What if it runs in the family?
I wanted to see how he worked, Charlie said. She spoke carefully, feeling like she had to appear as rational as possible. I would have taken Stanley and Ella too, but, you know,
they're bolted to the floor?
Pretty much, yeah. So I took Theodore. I'm actually using some of his components in my project. Charlie looked down at the disembodied bunny's head, into its blank glass eyes. Took him apart, using his component parts. That sounds rational. She had gotten Theodore from her father's house just before school began. Jessica hadn't been home. It was early evening, not quite dark, and Charlie had smuggled Theodore inside her backpack. She took him out, set him on the bed, and pressed the button to make him talk. As before, there was nothing but a strangled sound.
Ooh, Lee.
The scrambled, decayed traces of her father's voice. Charlie had felt a pang of anger at herself for even trying. You sound pretty awful, she said harshly to Theodore, who just looked up at her blankly, immune to the reprimand. Charlie rifled through her bag of tools and parts, which hadn't yet taken over her side of the room. She found her utility knife, then went grimly to her bed where the bunny waited. I'll put you back together when I'm done.
Right.
She looked up at John now, saw the doubt on his face. Or maybe it was concern, just like Jessica. Sorry, I know everything's a mess, she said, hearing the edge in her own voice. Maybe I'm a mess too, she added quietly. She set the bunny's head down on her pillow and the part of his leg beside it. So, do you still want to see my project? She asked.
Yes.
He smiled reassuringly and followed her to her desk. Charlie hesitated,
looking down at the pillowcase. Just a dream.
So, she said nervously. Charlie carefully switched everything on before unveiling the faces. Lights began to blink, and fans began to whir. She glanced at John again, and took off the cloth. The faces moved in little patterns, as if stretching out after waking, though there was little they could stretch. Charlie swallowed nervously.
"You, me," said the first one, and Charlie heard John make a surprised sound behind her.
"Me," said the second.
Charlie held her breath, but they fell silent.
"Sorry, they usually say more," Charlie said. She grabbed a small object from the table and held it up. It was an oddly shaped piece of clear plastic with wiring inside.
John frowned for a moment. "Is that a hearing aid?" he asked, and Charlie nodded enthusiastically.
"It used to be. It's something I'm experimenting with. They listen all the time. They pick up everything that's said around them, but they're just collecting data, not interacting with it. They can only interact with each other."
She paused, waiting for a sign that John understood. He nodded, and she went on.
"I'm still working out the kinks, but this thing should make the person wearing it visible to them. Not literally visible, I mean, they can't see, but they'll recognize the person wearing the device as one of them."
She looked expectantly at John.
"Why? What does that mean?"
he asked, seeming to search for words. Charlie closed her hand on the earpiece, frustrated.
"He doesn't understand."
"I made them. I want to interact with them," she said.
His expression grew thoughtful, and she looked away, suddenly regretting having shown him the object.
"Anyway, it's not really finished."
She edged to the door and glanced out.
"It's really cool,"
John called after her. When Charlie returned from the hallway, he gave her an odd look.
"Is everything okay?"
"Yes. You should go, though. You'll be late for work."
Charlie approached the faces. She looked down thoughtfully at her creations, then sighed and reached for the pillowcase to cover them. As she did, the second face moved. It jerked back on its stand and pivoted, blocking its blind eyes on Charlie's. She stared back. It was like looking at a statue. The eyes were only raised bumps in the molded plastic. But Charlie swallowed hard, feeling herself rooted to the spot. She studied the blank gaze until John put a hand on her shoulder. She jumped, startling him as well, then looked down at the earpiece in her hand.
"Oh, right," Charlie mumbled, and pressed the tiny power button on the side of it.
She placed the earpiece carefully on top of the mess in her desk drawer, then closed the drawer. The face was still for a moment, then it slowly turned back to its place. It settled there, locked in a mirrored stare with its double, as if it had never moved at all. Charlie covered them and switched them off, leaving them with only enough power to listen. At last, she looked up at John.
"Sorry," she said.
"Does that mean no to breakfast?"
"I have plans this morning," Charlie said. "Me and Jessica. You know, girl stuff."
"Really?"
John said quietly.
"Girl stuff? You?"
"Yes, girl stuff,"
Jessica squealed as she entered the room excitedly.
"Shopping. I finally convinced Charlie it's worth trying on her clothes before she buys them. We might even move past jeans and boots. Are you ready?"
"Ready,"
Charlie smiled, and John squinted at her. Jessica began escorting him gently out the door.
"Right," John said. "I'll see you later then, Charlie."
Charlie didn't respond, but Jessica gave a bright smile as she closed the door behind him.
"So,"
Jessica clasped her hands,
"where do you want to start today?"
When they got to the parking lot of the abandoned mall, it was early afternoon.
Charlie, this isn't what I had in mind, Jessica cried as they got out of the car.
Charlie started for the entrance, but Jessica didn't follow. When Charlie turned, she was leaning against the car with her arms crossed.
What are we doing here?
Jessica asked, her eyebrows raised.
We have to look inside, Charlie said. People's lives might depend on it. I just want to see if there is anything left of Freddy's. Then we can go.
Whose lives depend on it? And why now, suddenly?
Jessica asked. Charlie looked at her shoes.
I just want to see, she said. She felt like a petulant child, but she couldn't bring herself to tell Jessica the whole story.
Is this because John is here?
Jessica asked suddenly, and Charlie looked up, surprised.
What? No.
Jessica sighed and uncrossed her arms.
It's okay, Charlie. I get it. You haven't seen him since all of this happened, and then he shows up again. Of course it brings everything back.
Charlie nodded, gratefully latching on to this rationale. It was easier than hiding the truth from her.
I doubt there's much left anyway, she said. I just want to walk through and remind myself that it's really over.
Jessica finished. She smiled, and Charlie's heart sank.
It's really, really not over.
She forced a smile.
Something like that.
Charlie walked quickly through the mall, but Jessica lagged behind. The place felt entirely different. Sunlight poured in through massive gaps in the unfinished walls and ceiling. Shafts of light sifted between smaller cracks and splashed against stacks of concrete slabs. Charlie could see moths, maybe butterflies, hovering at the windows, and as they passed through the empty halls on their way to Freddy's, she could hear birds chirping. The deathly quiet she remembered, the overpowering sense of dread, was gone. Yet, Charlie thought as she glanced at the half-constructed storefronts, it still felt haunted, maybe even more than before. It was a different kind of haunting, not frightening. But Charlie had the sense that something was present, like stepping onto hallowed ground.
Hello?
Charlie said softly, not sure whom she was addressing.
Do you hear something?
Jessica slowed her pace.
No, it feels smaller.
Charlie gestured at the open mouths of the never-opened department stores and the end of the hall ahead of them.
It seemed so intimidating last time. It actually seems kind of peaceful.
Jessica spun in place, enjoying the air from outside, which was flowing freely through the empty spaces. Jessica followed Charlie through the doorway, and they stopped dead, blinded by bright sunlight. Freddy's had been torn apart. Some of the walls still stood. The far end looked almost intact. But in front of her was a field of debris. Old bricks and broken tiles were strewn in the dirt. The two of them stood now on a slab of concrete that lay baking in the sun. The passage inward, along with the entire side wall of the restaurant, was gone. The walls and ceiling were just a line of rubble against the trees. The concrete walkway was still there, worn dark by years of dank and leaking pipes.
So much for Freddy's,
Jessica said in a hushed voice, and Charlie nodded. They made their way through the debris. Charlie could make out where the main dining room had been, but everything was gone. The tables and chairs, the checkered cloths, and the party hats had all been removed. The merry-go-round had been ripped out, leaving nothing but a hole in the floor and some stray wires. The stage itself had been assaulted, though not removed. They must have been in the middle of that when the job was stopped. Boards were torn up across the main stage area, and the left-hand set of stairs was gone. What was left of the wall behind the stage broke off at the top, like jagged mountains along the sky.
Are you okay?
Jessica looked to Charlie.
Yeah, it's not what I expected, but I'm okay. She thought for a moment. I want to see what's still here.
Charlie gestured to the stage, and they crossed what was left of the dining area. The floorboards cracked, the linoleum torn. Jessica peered under a pile of rock where arcade machines had been. The consoles that had stood like dusty gravestones were gone, but they could see the outlines of each one. Square patches remained where they'd been torn from their posts. Stray wires huddled in small piles in the corners. Charlie turned her attention back to the main stage. She climbed up to where the animatronic animals had once performed.
Careful!
Jessica cried. Charlie nodded in absent acknowledgement. She stood to one side, remembering the layout.
This is where Freddy stood.
The boards were torn up in front of her and in two more places. The destruction here was where they had taken out the pivoting plates that bolted the mascots to the stage.
Not that they stayed bolted very long, Charlie thought wryly.
She could see it now if she closed her eyes.
The animals were going through their programmed motions, faster and faster, until it was clear they were out of control, moving wildly as if they were afraid. They were rocking on their stands, and then the awful sound of cracking wood as Bonnie lifted his bolted foot and tore himself free of the stage.
Charlie shook her head, trying to rid herself of the image. She made her way to the back of the stage. The lights were all gone, but a skeleton of exposed beams crisscrossed the open sky where the lights had been.
Jessica, she called. Where are you? Down here.
She followed the sound of the girl's voice. Jessica was crouched in the place where the control room had been, peering into the gap under the stage.
Nothing?
Charlie asked, not sure what answer she was hoping for.
It's been gutted, Jessica said. No monitors, nothing.
Charlie climbed down beside her, and they peered in together.
This is where we were trapped last time, Jessica said quietly. Me and John. There was something at the door, and the lock caught. I thought we would be stuck in that little room and...
She looked at Charlie, who simply nodded. The horrors of that night were unique to each of them. The moments that beset them in their sleep, or assailed their thoughts without warning in the middle of the day, were private.
Come on,
Charlie said abruptly, heading again toward the mound of rubble where more games had been. Charlie crouched under a large slab that leaned to the side and acted as a doorway to what was left of the place.
This seems dangerous.
Jessica tiptoed over the loose rock. The floor was still covered in carpet in most places, and Charlie could see the deep grooves where the arcade machine had been.
She hurled herself at the console, and somehow it was enough. It wobbled on its base, then fell, knocking Foxy to the ground and pinning him there. She ran, but he was too quick. He caught her by the leg and ripped his hook right through her. She screamed, staring down at the snapping, twisted metal jaws and the burning silver eyes. She heard a noise, almost a whimper, and realized it was her. She clapped her hands over her mouth.
I thought we were all going to die, Jessica whispered.
Me too, Charlie said.
They looked at each other for a moment, an eerie stillness settling over the sunlit wreckage.
Hey, this place is probably going to fall on us soon, so...
Jessica broke the silence, gesturing to the leaning slabs of concrete surrounding them. Charlie crawled back out the way they'd come and stood up. Her knees were crawling with pins and needles. She rubbed them, then stomped the ground.
I want to check the costume room. See if anything is left, Charlie said without expression.
You mean to see if anybody is left?
Jessica shook her head.
I have to know.
Charlie gave her jeans a final brush and started off toward it. The room stuck out of the rubble,
alone and intact. It was the place where the costumes had been kept, and where Carlton had briefly been held prisoner. Charlie cautiously poked her head inside, studying the physical details around her. The chipped paint on the wall, the carpet that someone had begun to tear up but left unfinished.
Don't think about last time. Don't think about what happened here.
She let her eyes adjust a moment longer, then went inside. The room was empty. They did a cursory search, but everything had been removed. There was nothing left but walls, floor, and ceiling.
Clay did say they had gotten rid of everything, Charlie said.
Jessica gave her a sharp look.
Clay? When?
He said he was going to, I mean, Charlie said hastily, covering the slip. Last year. They took a final look around. As they were leaving, Charlie spotted a glint of light from something in the corner. It was the plastic eyeball of some unknown animatronic mascot. Charlie was about to go to it, but stopped herself.
There's nothing here, she said.
Not waiting for Jessica, she headed back through the debris, looking down at her feet as she stepped over bricks and stones and shattered glass.
Hey, wait!
Jessica called after her hastily.
Pirate's Cove! Charlie, look!
Charlie stopped. She watched Jessica as she climbed over a steel beam and stepped carefully over the remains of a fallen wall. In front of her, a curtain lay strewn across what had appeared to be a pile of rubble. Charlie followed her, and when she caught up, she could see that the curtain concealed a gap in the ruins. The tops of a few glittering chairs peeked out from the stones. A row of broken stage lights lay across the top of the curtain, as though holding it in place.
It looks pretty good compared to the rest of the place, Jessica said.
Charlie didn't answer. There was a dirty poster lying flat on the ground, depicting a cartoonish Foxy delivering pizzas to happy children.
Jessica, look.
Charlie pointed to the ground.
Those look like claw marks, Jessica said after a moment.
There were long scratches and scrapes running the length of the floor, and dark marks that looked like traces of blood.
It's like someone was being dragged.
Jessica stood and followed the scratches. They led behind the curtain, away from the area where Pirate's Cove once stood.
The stage,
Jessica said. When they moved the curtain aside, they found the stage had a small hatch at the back.
Storage, Charlie murmured.
She pulled on it, but the hatch wouldn't open.
There has to be a latch somewhere, Jessica said.
She cleared away dirt and broken wood from the base of the stage, uncovering a deadbolt that went into the floor. She pulled it up, releasing the door, which swung open like something was pushing against it. A face lurched out of the darkness, two gaping eyes swinging forward. Jessica screamed and fell backward. Charlie recoiled. The masked face hung lifelessly from a rotted fur costume. An entire mascot suit was inside, crammed into a space much too small for it. Charlie stopped, her whole body numb with shock as she stared at the thing with a dread almost as old as she was.
The yellow rabbit, she whispered.
It's Dave,
Jessica gasped. Charlie took a deep breath, forcing herself back into the present.
Come on, help me, she said.
She stepped forward and grabbed at the fabric, pulling on whatever she could reach.
You're kidding. I'm not touching that thing.
Jessica, get over here,
Charlie commanded, and Jessica came reluctantly over.
Ew, ew, ew.
Jessica touched the suit, then recoiled. She gave Charlie a flat look and tried again, yanking her hands away as soon as she touched it.
Ew,
she repeated quietly, then finally screwed her eyes shut and took hold of it. Together they pulled, but nothing happened.
I think it's stuck,
Jessica said. They shifted positions and finally heaved the mascot out of the cramped space. The fabric caught on stray nails and jagged wood, but Charlie kept pulling. At last, the creature was out, splayed heavily on the ground.
I definitely don't think Dave faked his own death, Charlie said.
What if it's not him? Jessica peered carefully into the face.
It's him.
Charlie looked at the dried blood soaked into the mascot's fingertips. The spring locks might not have killed him right away, but this is where he died. They could see Dave's body through the gaps in the costume, and the wide, carved eyes of the mascot head showed through to his face. His skin was desiccated and shriveled. His eyes were wide open, his face expressionless and discolored. Charlie moved closer again. Her initial shock had passed, and now she was curious to see more of him. She probed carefully at first, in case some of the spring locks inside might still be waiting to snap, but it was clear that they'd already done their damage. The locks had been driven so deeply into his skin that the bases of each were flush against his neck. They looked like part of him. Charlie studied the chest of the costume. There were large tears in the yellow fabric, which had gone green and pink with mold in patches. She grabbed hold of the sides and pulled the gap open as wide as she could. Jessica watched, fascinated, her hand over her mouth. Skewers of metal protruded through his entire body, dull and crusted with his blood. And there were more complex parts, twisted knots of gore with many layers of machinery that stuck out from his body. The suit's fabric was stiff with blood, too, yet the man didn't seem to have rotted, despite the year that had passed.
It's like he's fused with the suit, Charlie said.
She tugged at the mascot head, trying to pull it off, but gave up quickly. The gaping eyes stared up at her, behind which was the dead man's face. With the light directly on him, Dave's skin appeared sickly and discolored. Charlie felt a sudden rush of nausea. She pulled back from the corpse and looked up at Jessica.
So now what? Jessica said. Did you want to give him a foot massage too?
She abruptly turned her head away, gagging at her own joke.
Listen, I have class in... Charlie checked her watch. About an hour. Did you still want to do some shopping?
Why can't I have normal friends?
Jessica groaned.